We say hello now to John McClain from Houston. You can find his work, HoustonTexans.com. And, John, I know you have to feel like we do, that finally the draft is here and we can quit talking about what-ifs and actually talk about what has happened with the draft. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you. I go way back when it comes to the draft, way before ESPN, when we sat around a hotel ballroom in close to the Oilers facility, and all the teams were listed on top of a big board. The NFL would call. They would make an announcement, go up there and write the name on the board. Draft at one point was 24 rounds, then 18, then 16. At one point, they did 12 rounds in one day. And then finally, when ESPN started televising it, I think in 1980, that took it to a new level. And, of course, it's just grown and grown, and now it's paralysis by overanalysis, as everybody likes to say. And I feel bad for the people that have to talk about it every single day. How much more can you say? Everybody's talking about trading up. Everybody's talking about trading down. And where the Titans are picking number 7 reminds me of a streak the Oilers went through in 81 through 87, in which they had a high draft choice every year because they were terrible. In 1982, they used their first-round pick on Mike Munchak. 1983 on Bruce Matthews. In 1984, they signed Warren Moon and drafted Nebraska guard Dean Steinkuhler. That was 3 first-round picks on offensive linemen. And the idea was they wanted to stockpile the top linemen and run the ball with Earl Campbell, who was a Hall of Fame running back. And the idea was run Earl right, Earl left, Earl up the middle. And then in 84, they signed Warren Moon, who was an unrestricted free agent, really the first in NFL history coming from Canada. So in 85, they took it was an interesting story in the 1985 draft because they got Ray Childers, defensive end from Texas A&M, and Ray was a great player. So they went through a string of high picks that helped them go to the playoffs 7 years in a row. No other team was able to do that. And when I look at the Titans in the 7th pick, the key to me for them to get Joe Alt is the Chargers at 5. The Chargers need offensive tackle and they need wide receiver. And if they were to make that trade with Minnesota and get 11 and 23, it's a deep draft for wide receivers and offensive tackles. So they could fill both needs if they trade out. But if they stay at 5, and I don't believe anything Jim Harbaugh says, especially at this time of year, but he kept talking over and over about the offensive line and how important it was. So if indeed the Chargers were to take, say, Joe Alt, by far the best line prospect in this draft, then when Rand Carthon comes up at number 7, what does he do? That would probably mean one of the top 3 receivers would be available. And even though it's not a desperate need, adding another playmaker for Will Levis would be very enticing. So if that were the case, if all were gone, what do you guys think the Titans would do?
I'm kind of with you. I think if Neighbors is there, I think Malik Neighbors is a Tennessee Titan. That's what I think.
Okay, what if he's not? What if the Giants have taken him and Arizona takes Marvin Harrison Jr.? Some people still have Roma Dunze as a top prospect. Would you guys take a Dunze there, take another tackle, or trade down?
I'd consider a Dunze, but I'd also consider if there's a team behind me that loves one of these quarterbacks and I feel like I could add more draft picks, then I'd probably trade back.
I think that would be a very likely scenario. Rand Carthon, obviously, in total control of everything. And you want to put as many weapons around your quarterback and protect him as best you can when you're trying to find out if Will Levis can be the franchise quarterback. So I would expect him to take an offensive player. Good thing, when you have a need, and the need is 2 of the deepest and most talented positions, it's almost like you can't go wrong.
Yeah, exactly right. Talking to John McClain, as the NFL draft is tomorrow, and Friday and Saturday. John, take me back. You know, we've broken down this draft so many ways, but I want to go back to a time when 1995, when the Oilers took Steve McNair third, a guy out of Alcorn State. You know, we saw how great Steve was when he came here and everything. But at that moment, what was the speculation like before? Because they needed a quarterback. He had Chris Chandler. What was it like taking Steve McNair, a guy out of Alcorn State who, you know, was not playing for a Power 5 school at the time?
Everybody loved McNair. Everybody had scouted him thoroughly. The Oilers had the third overall pick. Jeff Fisher and Floyd Reese, he was the guy. McNair was in New York. Bud Adams sent him. Sent his plane up there to get him. Some media people were on the plane. They flew back with Steve and his agent, Buzz Cook. And, of course, when he landed at a private airport, it was such a big deal because the team had been struggling. They were all they had gone from 12-4 in 1993, winning the AFC South and then, Central, and then moving up. They won a playoff game, got beat here. Joe Montana's last miracle. The next season, when they're trying to get a new stadium, they go from 12-4 to 2-14, the biggest plunge, one season plunge in NFL history. But that entitled them to draft McNair. Everybody was on board, as opposed to the next year when they took Eddie George and Floyd Reese. I had Eddie George going to them in my mock draft because they told me how much they liked him and how they wanted him. Then Floyd trades down in the first round, and I'll never forget. PR guy Dave Pearson still gives me grief about this. I jumped up and started cussing. I should have been a little more professional, but I told everybody on my radio shows they're going to draft Heisman Trophy winner Eddie George. So Floyd trades down. I'm like, what in the hell? Then he got him anyway. Jim Moore, the Saints coach, taking a corner, said the biggest mistake he ever made was when he passed up Eddie George for, I think his name was Molden. And, of course, Eddie was one of the greatest running backs in history.
Yeah, and that, you know, and the rest is said for itself. We talked yesterday, John, about the most impactful draft choice, you know, since the Titans moved here in 1997, since it became the Titans in 99. And we all kept coming back to Javon Kearse, and we had a soundbite.
We actually have the soundbite, and I wanted to play it for John.
Yeah, so, okay.
John, you'll appreciate this. So Floyd told the story a few years ago when he was still on our afternoon show of how he got Javon Kearse. And you probably remember this, but this was Floyd Reese telling the story of Javon Kearse.
The Javon Kearse draft. We loved Javon. I mean, we loved him. And I really thought Javon would go in the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 picks. And so, you know, I watched him, and he got past 7. And you're thinking, wow, you know, is there a chance? So we started calling these other teams. You know, would you be interested in a trade? Would you be interested in a trade? And we just couldn't find anybody that we could sell on a trade. So he keeps moving down and he keeps moving down. And now he's at 15. And in my mind, this will make your draft. If you can get this guy, it will make the entire draft. And so I called Richie McKay, who was at Tampa Bay. He was a GM at Tampa at that time. And I said, Richie, I said, I want to move up to your spot. I said, I'll give you virtually whatever you want. I said, I got to get there. He said, no. He said, I think I'm going to make the pick. Well, then the obvious thing you say is, oh, geez. Well, okay, who are you going to take? He said, I'm going to take a defensive lineman. And I went, oh, no. I said, who are you going to take? He says, well, I'm going to take, I think it was Booger McFarland. I said, McFarland? He goes, yeah. I said, oh, okay, bye.
And the rest is history. That was Floyd Reese. What do you remember about that?
Well, first of all, when you're talking about the most impactful draft choice since they got to Nashville, you know, Chris Johnson made a pretty big impact too. But for what Javon Kearse, the freak, did right away, what he helped transform the pass rush, and really the defense, and he helped do it with the team because, you know, they drafted some superstars at the end here And then up there, they, Jeff and Floyd, they were on a roll. And they had a good personnel department with them, led by Rich Snead, the late Rich Snead. And so I thought that was a great story, and I did not know it. I didn't know that that's how it came about, but that is a very, very interesting. And I'll guarantee you, you know, Booger McFarland was okay. He's a better broadcaster, really, than he was as a defensive lineman. And Rich McKay probably, oh, my goodness, we passed up the freak.
All right, John, we see it all the time in the draft.
Stop, Joe, I got stories. I'm sorry.
No,
I've been looking through the Oilers drafts, and I found some very interesting. This just blows me away. The Oilers drafted four players who are head coaches in the SWAC. Chris Dishman, the new head coach at Texas Southern, safety, he was a corner, but safety Bob McDowell, head coach at Prairie View, Eddie George, of course. And in 92, their first pick, second round, Eddie Robinson, the coach at Alabama State. I think that is pretty darn amazing. And I thought of a story here that people ask me all the time about interesting draft stories. And back when the draft was still 12 rounds, that was in 92, was the last year, before they went to 8 rounds in 93. And their last 8th round pick was Blaine Bishop, a safety from Ball State. And but in the last pick, the Oilers needed a kicker. And then the draft in 92, in which Eddie Robinson was the first pick, the general manager, Mike Olivak, he took a kicker, Joe Wood, from Air Force. So we got Joe back then. We interviewed every player on a conference call. So they were so fired up to get their kicker. And Mike Olivak had talked about how excited he was. So we get Joe Wood. He talks about how happy he is to be drafted. Never thought he'd be drafted. And he couldn't wait to get to Houston in 4 years. And we're like, what do you mean 4 years? He said, well, I've got an Air Force commitment for the next 4 years. And when we interviewed Mike Olivak, we told him that, and he goes, oh. So they had to get another kicker.
Oh, my goodness. By the way, I'm looking at the 1992 draft. Not a single player in that draft, John, made the Hall of Fame. So it just shows you that you never know. You could evaluate a guy all day long. You never know what you're going to get. And with that being said, this talk about Drake May, about falling down, we had a discussion today, you know, John, if Drake May is there at 7, should the Titans take Drake May? I say absolutely not, but a lot of people say, look, if he's the best player on the board, take him. Your thoughts?
That's a waste of time. There's no way Drake May is going to be available with the 7th pick. It's preposterous.
Smoke
if you
screen.
Look at what he did this year and this past season, when he didn't have all the people around him that he had the previous year when he was outstanding. So Drake May is coveted by a lot of teams up at the top. Now, maybe Minnesota trades up to get him or J.J. McCarthy, but I don't see any way May is available because somebody would have traded up to get him before that if indeed he started to fall out of the top three.
Another thing is I think Brock Bowers will be a fine NFL player. But, John, if he's there at 7, the Titans should not take him because we've talked about it. They need a left tackle. Unless they're going to move Brock Bowers to a left tackle, they shouldn't take him if Joe Walt's still sitting there.
I'll tell you something Al Davis told me one time, Joe. I was talking to him at a league meeting, and he said he always, always drafted for people who could score touchdowns, people who could put points on the board. Now, the game has changed since then. With so much emphasis on defense, you know, everything's about the quarterback. You protect him and you get him with a pass rush. So the tackles and the ends. And now, of course, shortest path to the quarterback's up the middle, so there's more of an emphasis on defensive tackles. But with all due respect to Brock Bowers, who's like a big wide receiver, he weighs like 245. He can line up anywhere. I think he'll be a great receiver. But you can get tight ends. Where was Travis Kelce drafted? 3rd round. Where's George Kittle drafted? 5th round. You don't need to do that. But if you get a chance to get Joe Alt, who can anchor that left side for 10 years, maybe more if you pay him, who is one of the most well-schooled offensive tackles coming out of college in history, you've got to take Joe off, because you can get tight ends, you can get wide receivers, you can get running backs, you can get interior offensive linemen, you can get them in the other rounds.
We're talking to John McClain from Houston. John, you've covered a lot of these drafts for a long time. So on the day before the draft, you're talking to people, how much is your BS meter up? Because this is lion season. I mean, this is, you know, smoke screens are everywhere. And, you know, Floyd used to tell us that, you know, he would tell one scout that he's going to take one player, and he'd take another scout, he's going to take another player, and then whoever the paper had, he knew where the leak was. So how much is your BS meter up right now?
During draft time, Floyd only lied when his lips moved. And we all knew that, and he was always very nice about it. But he did help me a few times, like on Eddie George. But it's amazing. I don't know how the teams differentiate. I guess you can talk to people you're close to and know they're going to tell you the truth. But I don't know many, unless they don't have a clue who's going to be available in the middle on down in the first round, really in the middle. You know, all we know right now is Caleb Williams is going first. Projections are that Daniels is going second, and Drake May or J.J. McCarthy is going third. And there's so many teams that still need quarterbacks, but there's nothing to hype up a draft than one that's deep in quarterbacks like this one, and so many teams needing him, because it's the sexy position, the toughest position to play in football. And when you think about the going rates, about $50 million a year. Ooh. I remember when running backs were paid more than quarterbacks. And quarterbacks threw about as many interceptions as they did touchdown passes. And if you had 20-something touchdown passes, you were the ruler of the land. And so I like reading speculation and listening, just like everybody does. But it's amazing. Of all the mock drafts I did for over 40 years, I only got double figures one time. And the most interesting story I've ever heard about the draft, Bill Belichick told his story at the eulogy for Joel Bushbaum, the late NFL editor for Pro Football Weekly, who was the best football guy I've ever seen who wasn't with a team. At the eulogy, Belichick was the first speaker. I was second because Joel did a show here on my station for like 20 years every week. So Bill got up and said the last thing he did the night before his draft was call Joel Bushbaum. And he would tell him, he trusted him so much, he would tell him his draft board. And he said if Joel told him, Bill, I don't think you should take this guy, he said, I wouldn't say we're not going to do it, but I would give serious thought. He tried to hire Joel when he was with the Browns and the Patriots, said, I will pay you more than any money you can ever imagine. And he said, Bill, thank you, but I feel like I work for every team in this job. I was the only reporter to go to Brooklyn where he lived and write about it. He wouldn't let anybody else do it. Anybody wants to read it, John McClain, Joel Bushbaum, Bushbaum, it's on the internet. And so for Bill Belichick to have that much confidence and trust in a guy who wasn't even in the NFL, that has always blown me away.
John, great stuff. Always enjoy the stories, and I'm sure we'll have more to tell next week after the draft and sift through it all, but appreciate it.
I look forward to it, guys. Good luck to the Titans in the draft.